What's going on, guys? Matt here. Classic. We might be in preseason. Week one, not too far away. We got the Hall of Fame game coming up this week, and yet still, classic off-season thing happened to us today where we recorded today's show, and then about an hour later, we got news that Stephon Diggs signing with the Washington Commanders. So James and I do not discuss that on today's show. So just wanted to give you a quick little kind of thought process on that one. Although I can promise you on Monday, we're going to do a full breakdown. I'm going to have Diggs and Terry McLaurin's profiles up on the site, the full reception perception breakdown on Monday morning. So we'll have a full picture of that there, talk about how they fit into David Blau's offense, which I'm really excited about. Just real quick, though, thoughts here on Stephon Diggs before we get into the main episode. Listen, I think Diggs showed last year that he absolutely still has it. It was a little bit rough at first. I talked about that very early on in the season with his charting profile. First 3 weeks of the season, I was like, man, you know, It's not even looking close to like the same old Stephon Diggs. But, you know, he was a 30-plus-year-old receiver coming off of an ACL tear. Like, what do we expect? Of course, it's going to take a little bit of time, you know, for him to really, really be kind of back to full-on Stephon Diggs. By week four, I remember writing on the site then that, hey, yeah, this guy's crushing it. Okay, this guy is he's separating at a really high level once again. Big game against the Panthers, and then the next week, he tears up his former team, the Buffalo Bills. And really what he did in that game was very indicative of who he was basically the rest of the season, which was mostly a short area layup target against man coverage for the New England Patriots, playing multiple positions as well. He was in the slot on 52% of his snaps in the regular season last year. And again, that was just kind of who he was throughout the season. He was played the Z, played the slot, he moved around, but he was really good against man coverage in particular, to the point that he was eighth in yards per route run against man coverage, which not a perfect stat, not a receiver isolating stat, of course, as we know, but really productive against man coverage over the course of the season, and became kind of that layup guy in the short and intermediate area for Drake May. So I think that's, look, what the Commanders need at this point. They have Terry McLaurin and that's it. You know, Treylon Burks, like, rehabilitation project. That's fine, but that can't be your number two outside receiver. Antonio Williams, nice player, but he is a rookie. Hasn't necessarily popped all the way in training camp just yet. Doesn't mean it won't happen for him, but you know, it's a lot to ask of a day two rookie receiver, a third round kind of slot first player, to just come in here and be the number two receiver right away. I like that they went into camp and just saw, hey, anyone else want to grab this opportunity? Guess not. They go ahead and sign Stephon Diggs to a one-year deal. And we know why he waited around for a long time to sign. A lot going on with Steph Diggs, okay, off the field. So, yeah, I think this one makes sense for both sides. I'm still really excited about the Commanders' offense. And as mentioned, James and I are not going to talk about it on today's show because we recorded it, like I said, just about a freaking hour before this thing broke. Classic. But full breakdown coming on Monday on Terry McLaurin, what he can do in this offense, where Stephon Diggs can fit, and just the whole thing here. So, with that, let's get into the rest of the show with me and James Coe. Big show coming up before you here today. Let's get into it.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception, Perception, the show. All right, Matt. Big episode today because some players got some big contract extensions. Talking about Chris Olave, but I wanted to start the show talking about Zay Flowers getting
literally Justin Jefferson money. Zay Flowers signed the exact same contract as Justin Jefferson signed last year. I'm just saying, like, I know Zay Flowers is a good player. I don't know if he's Justin Jefferson level. I feel very strongly that Baltimore overpaid for Zay Flowers. But regardless, I get why they got the contract extension done. I was just surprised by the figures.
Definitely, if first look, it's like, whoa, $140 million a year, 35 per for Zay Flowers.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, Justin Jefferson signed that deal 2 years ago. You know, June 30th, 2024 is when he signed that contract. So obviously they're paying for current prices, which wide receivers, of course, have gone up. Like if Justin Jefferson signed that deal today, he would get Jaxon Smith-Njigba money, which is $42 million a year. So, yeah, again, the contract stuff is always kind of like, sorry, folks, this is markets. And I get it. Like it is certainly on face value odd to see Zay Flowers getting that. And I mean, shoot, even like Bijan Robinson signed for less money than the Falcons gave Matthew Bergeron. And the running back market conversation is just like a whole nother sticky situation to kind of talk about. But, you know, nevertheless, it obviously stinks for those running backs for sure. That's just, it's brutal. But yeah, I mean, look, Zay Flowers, it's a little bit less than what Drake London signed for. London signed for $141 million, 35.3 per. Zay Flowers is pretty much a straight 34 per. You know, I think if we're sitting down and ranking wide receivers, I would have Drake London ahead of Zay Flowers. I would probably have Chris Olave ahead of Zay Flowers. But, you know, you could make an argument about that. Zay is a little bit younger and he's just certainly been a little bit steadier from a health and availability perspective. But Chris Olave gets $31 million per, you know, like we can do that stuff where there are guys that are making less money than Zay Flowers that I would rather have than Zay Flowers. But, you know, regardless, like I'm not too bent out of shape about this. This is just kind of where the wide receiver market is right now. I do wonder if any team ever is just essentially like, man, you know, like, are we just like nobody, who's letting a wide receiver walk? That's like a good to great player, but obviously not an elite player. Nobody's done it yet. You do wonder if some team does it eventually, but that has yet to happen, really. If we're being honest, I mean, probably the best example is the Seahawks let DK, like they traded away DK Metcalf because they weren't willing to pay him $33 million a year almost. And I mean, I think that's aged really well for Seattle. That's just because they had a better player in house. Baltimore does not have a better player than Zay Flowers in house, and ultimately, I think what they're hoping for is that they're paying for future production. And I do believe, as we've talked about a lot on the show, I think that Zay Flowers is set up to make another leap this year from a statistical perspective. At least that's my opinion. So, yeah, I'm not too bent out of shape about it, but I get it. It's shocking on face value to see he's making the same amount of money as Justin Jefferson. I think it's time for Justin Jefferson to come and say, hey, we need my salary needs to start with a 4, not a 3. But hopefully we'll see what that offense looks like this year.
You know, I'll also say this in relation to Zay Flowers, Puka Nacua apparently ditched his agents and signed Zay Flowers' agents, who also happened to be Jaxon Smith-Njigba's agents. Just FYI.
Cornering the market on, you know, 2023 drafted, you know, young receivers that are coming up for their extensions.
But it tells me though, Matt, that Puka Nacua will not be giving the Rams a discount by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's going to be asking for absolute maximum dollars here. So again, when you take a look at Zay Flowers' contract, he obviously got maximum money there. JSN got maximum money. So I'll be curious, you know, because he obviously has some off the field issues and stuff like that. And I know he's trying to keep himself out of the headlines right now, except through his play. But this move behind the scenes to me indicates that Puka Nacua will absolutely be seeking big time money at the top end of what he can get and will not be giving the Rams any kind of discount whatsoever.
Do you think the Rams are interested in giving him that contract right now? I would say probably not. Yeah. I mean, when does that happen? I don't think it's happening before week one. Is it happening at the end of the season? And there's a couple of guys, by the way, you know, two that stick out to me. One who is, I think, come out and say he doesn't want to sign a contract to the end of the season. You know, Josh Downs is one. Parker Washington is a guy who they've talked contract extension for him. Oh, they were both 2023 draft picks. And if I'm Parker Washington, and I know Josh, again, Downs has already said, like, I'm not thinking about that until the end of the season, which I think is a smart move for Downs because he's without a doubt set up to have a career year. And I think Parker Washington is set up extremely well to crush this year, and they can't stop the Jags can't stop talking about how excited they are about Parker Washington. So if I'm Parker Washington, I'm like, if I believe what you're selling me, talk to me at the end of the year. Don't talk to me at the beginning of the year, because there's a chance Parker Washington could be a $30 million receiver. You know, Josh Downs, a $30 million receiver by the end of this year. You know, if Zay Flowers is signing for that money. But yeah, Puka's interesting. He is definitely a guy that should be saying, my contract should start with a four. It should be $40 million a year. You know,
the if we're just talking about on-field production.
Well, and that's the thing. That's why I think it's not going to happen before this year, because if you're him, you want to have a clean offseason of, you know, I didn't have any. I mean, there's some serious stuff that he's shown up with, you know,
the
bite marks and all that stuff. Like, I mean, come on, like, what are we doing? Yeah, so he needs to have like a clean. I don't know, maybe not 12 months, like not next August, but he certainly needs to have a clean season here. The one thing I would worry about, though, I mean, I know we're going to talk about Davante Adams on the show here today. You just look at this Rams offense, and it is very just fragile. Like, they're walking on like a tight rope, and everything, for the most part, fired on all cylinders last year. Not that I think it would matter necessarily if Puka had a slightly less statistical season than he did last year, that it would matter for his contract extension. But, you know, Alaric Jackson's another guy not had a clean offseason whatsoever. Matthew Stafford is another year older, and, you know, the amortal chamber is still a thing, even if it wasn't a problem last year. Davante Adams will be 34 years old in December. And behind those guys, it's like Jordan Whittington and Kanata Mumfield.
That CJ Daniels kid is making some noise in camp, though.
I will say, this is it's so funny. The couple of guys you hear about, like rookies that are making pop in training camp, and like Jacoby Lane's another example.
Sure.
CJ Daniels, two guys that are just like total contested catch. I don't want to say merchants, but contested catch specialists. This is on the record. I say this on the show. This is the time of the year for the contested catch bros. This is when they pop off. So we'll see what those guys do in the NFL. But I think Daniels, it does sound like they see him as more of like a tough, rugged, big slot receiver than a boundary guy, which again, that's kind of what Jordan Whittington is. Kanata Mumfield is like maybe more of a outside receiver because he's got some decent release moves, but you know, it's Deannis is really thin behind these two guys, and everything is kind of really thin for the Los Angeles Rams right now. So I don't know that really makes a difference for Puka Nacua, but it just is one of those things where you really want to, like, Jaxon Smith-Njigba struck when the iron was as white hot as it could be after the offensive player of the year season,
Super Bowl,
you know,
all that.
Super Bowl, obviously. Even Zay Flowers, like, the Ravens didn't have the season that they wanted last year, but he still showed growth and improvement and kind of struck while the iron maybe wasn't its hottest. Again, it could be hotter at the end of this year, but that's when you want to do the contract extension. Chris Olave absolutely struck when the iron was white hot after coming off the best year of his career. There's just definitely a chance, based on not even his own individual play, that Puka Nacua, maybe the iron won't be as hot, you know, at the end of the year. It's just definitely possible. Nothing to like freak out about. And same thing with Justin Jefferson. I was curious. I kind of wanted to bring that question back to you. Like, are you buying the now? Because I feel like we've probably talked about this before. Are you buying any of the kind of consistent and persistent talk that this is a real quarterback competition? And like, Kyler Murray, by all reports in training camp, is not shutting the door on JJ McCarthy. Like, I still think Kyler will start week one, but I'm holding on to that take a little looser than I was probably a month ago. And now I think I honestly, just based on the tenor of it, and it's a long way to go till week one.
Yeah.
But I'd be a little bit surprised if we don't see JJ McCarthy start a game this year. And so how good is the Vikings offense going to be? Like, how hot will Justin Jefferson doesn't need it, but it sure would be nice if he's not coming off like back to back. I barely had 1,000 yards and, you know, and maybe totaled six touchdowns or something over the last two seasons combined.
Right. Yeah, look, my take on the quarterback battle there in Minnesota. One, Kyler is not known in NFL circles as being the hardest worker in the building. I think that much is, and again, you could bring up the Call of Duty memes if you want, whatever, whatever. But the bottom line is, he's just not known in the NFL as being the hardest worker. He's learning a brand new playbook again this offseason. So how much of the playbook has he picked up? Again, we're not 100% sure. But I'll also go back to when this first happened, that it was announced that Kyler was going to go to Minnesota. And you and I have talked about this, that it's a weird pairing. Like, he can be an above average quarterback, but this offense in particular doesn't seem to suit his skill set, where you, again, are asked to attack the intermediate middle of the field. And guess what? Guess the one thing that Kyler does not do is attack the intermediate middle of the field. So I just think it's strange. I've also seen reports that the JJ McCarthy has looked at times terrible, which doesn't surprise me either. So it feels as if this is a quarterback-like battle that I don't want to say neither guy wants to win, but I don't think someone's going to shine through. Neither guy will win. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's a thing that's like a quarterback is going to come and absolutely shine and be, hey, man, we got to go with this guy. I think it's just going to be the better of two not great options, you know?
Yeah, and usually how that goes, which, by the way, I said this about the Colts last year, and I was dead wrong. I said, tell me how this is not just going to be both guys start games, Daniel Jones, Anthony Richardson, and, like, by the end of the year, everybody gets fired. Again, I was dead wrong about that. Multiple guys started games for the Colts last year. None of them were Anthony Richardson. Right. One of them was a grandpa. was only because of injury. Daniel Jones was going to start the whole season, and they were cooking on offense. So I was really wrong about that. But part of me thinks, like, tell me how this doesn't end. It just, this is the way I feel on August 5th. And I'm, you know, you write this in pencil. This is not written in pen, but I'm kind of getting the vibe of both guys start games this year and everyone gets fired at the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, I think KOC's built up enough cachet that he would be on the hot seat, but it's not out of the run. Hey, listen, if they fall apart, if Minnesota falls apart, for
tough division,
tough division, man.
Tough division. Happen. By the way, Zay Flowers just said to Jameson Hensley of ESPN that he gained 8 pounds of muscle this offseason.
Hey, there we go. That's shaping my life offseason narrative. All right, let's go.
I saw a headline from Easton Freeze, who covers the Tennessee Titans. Really good reporter for the Titans. He was writing a profile, I guess, on Elik Iomanner. And one of the things that he wrote in his tweet to sell it was, Elik Iomanner accidentally gained 7 pounds of muscle. And number one, I'm sure he didn't gain 7 pounds of muscle. And my second thought was like, oh my God, I am working my ass off every day of my life to just be like moderately overweight. And this guy's gaining 7 pounds by accident. I am working my ass off dieting hard to look like I got like a super mid physique, and he's gaining 7 pounds of muscle by accident. Makes me upset.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's he's a nice professional athlete at like 23 years old, and I was
like, it must be nice to be 20 something, you know.
I'm 35 with terrible genes, so what can you do? Okay.
Well, there you go. Anyways, you decided to pick up a side quest here, Matt. As if you weren't busy enough, you decided to try and quantify which wide receivers experienced the biggest shifts in their roles last season. First of all, what is wrong with you? Why are you picking up side quest on August 5th? Like, what are we doing out here?
And well, second, it was August 4th. It was yesterday. So,
oh, good. Okay. August 4th. Not sure why you're picking up side quest, at this point in the off season, but that's cool. The actual question though is, what made you think about doing this? You know?
Yeah. So actually what made me think about doing it, was I was talking, you know, I know you and I had this conversation. I've been just, now that I'm, you know, we're kind of doing fantasy rankings and everything, just looking at things like I may have overthought or not thought enough about. And in that pursuit was looking at the tier of receivers where DJ Moore lies. Not one of the guys, by the way, that's on this list, but I just wanted to think about like,
I'm looking at him just where he is with all these other receivers, and I'm like, man, Lane, are we sure that, you know, DJ Moore, who probably is going to moonwalk into 130 targets with Josh Allen, should be in the same tier of guys, like, you know, some real declining player risks there and all that sort of stuff. And one of the reasons I've maybe become a little more bullish on DJ is a conversation you and I had on the show not too long ago. And, you know, I shared the route graphics about this. Is this, like, I think he's in line for a pretty significant role change from not just a snaps and alignment perspective, but like a route perspective. Mm-hmm. Like if his route tree shifts in the way that I think it is going to shift in Joe Brady's offense, I think not only will he have a good statistical season, I could really tell myself a story that his, like, reception perception, overall success rate metrics look a lot better. So, because I've just been looking at how he's a really good receiver on kind of nine routes, curl routes, slant routes, where he was mostly running routes in the intermediate middle of the field, like digs and outs, two of his lesser graded routes. So I kind of wanted to go back in to the last two seasons worth of data and see if I could try to quantify the different role change for players who had the biggest role changes from mm-hmm. last year, from 2024 to 2025. So 2 years ago to the following. And I think we got some pretty encouraging results about, yeah, certain players were leaned into more the routes that they were good at, as opposed to the routes that they weren't as good at, in addition to some alignment data shift. And it was pretty conclusive, I think, that if guys get into the right role, you know, like, not only are their RP results better, but statistically they also can take a step forward as well. So that was what I wanted to look at this year to try to sort of find, like, honestly, DJ Moore was the guy that got me thinking about this, and I don't think I included this in the sheet that I sent you, but one of the other things I tried to look at was calculating which wide receivers were most misused last year. Again, running routes that they were not as good on relative to their higher success rate routes. DJ Moore, out of the 31 receivers I have right now, 56 wide receivers I have right now, he was a guy that leaned in. He was the sixth most misused player based on the score that I came up with. And I won't bore everybody with, like, the details and stuff like that. But
sure.
Sixth most misused behind Brian Thomas Jr., Chimere Dike, Jawan Jennings, Torrey Horton, and Jalen McMillan. I thought the Brian Thomas Jr. being the most misused receiver was pretty interesting because they had him running a ton of dig routes and he did not perform well in those dig routes last year, which lines up certainly with what we've talked about a lot over the last, 365 days.
That could be its own conversation, but let's talk about the five guys that you had in terms of the biggest shifts that their roles saw last year. And we'll start with George Pickens there in Dallas.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Yeah, he was the fifth most change in his role. The biggest thing that we saw for him was the route that he had that jumped up the most was his dig route percentage. He ran a ton more dig routes, and he also really improved from a success rate standpoint there. Certainly lines up with what we've thought over the last few years in the Pittsburgh offense with the quarterbacks that he was playing with. They did not ever consistently access the intermediate middle of the field, and George Pickens did not really run routes there either because of that. So big improvement there from a role shift perspective. Also, as we've discussed, he did not get used a lot in the slot, which was, I think, actually a way that he could even be, like, better, you know, in 2026 than 2025. He had, like, a historically low slot percentage. So yeah, his routes from the slot, his reps from the slot actually came down. He played even more outside, which leans into George Pickens' best stuff. Pickens is still, at this point in his career, you know, kind of an average to maybe even slightly below average zone beater, but he is cracking on the door of being one of the best man and press coverage receivers in the NFL. And the more you play outside, the more your routes and reps you go against press man coverage. So Pickens definitely saw a big shift in that way.
Okay, so moving up the list here, Rome Odunze. What was the shift there year one to year two?
Yeah, big shift for him was actually, and this is something I've talked about a lot with Rome. So sometimes it's good to, like, you put the stuff into a formula. It's like, okay, well, that's what I thought anyways. Rome Odunze, the biggest thing that he saw the shift was his alignment data. This is something that I've harped on consistently with Odunze. People think he's this, like, X receiver in Ben Johnson's offense. Maybe he will play more X than he did last year, but that was not really the case for him. His snaps off ball jumped from just about 40% to 47%. He played a little bit less in the slot, but mostly, essentially more played as a Z receiver in year two. And that was a pretty big difference for him. In addition to the fact that his dig route percentage, once again, another dig route guy, really went up here for Rome Odunze. He was at a dig route percentage of just 13% in his rookie year. It was 23% in his second season. That corresponded with fewer curl routes, way fewer nine routes. His nine route percentage went from 17.8% to 8.2% from 2024 to 2025. And just the meat of his route tree really changed from those kind of more straight line vertical routes, the nines, the curls, and much more into the intermediate area. Out route percentage went from 9.4% to 13.5%, and the massive almost 10 percentage point jumps from actually over 10 percentage point jump from the dig route from year one to year two. That was a big deal for him. That's where Ben Johnson's offense wants to live. Those in and out breaking routes in that area, Odunze with more snaps off ball, fully in motion. I think he's just going to cook again. As long as he's healthy, he's going to cook again on those routes like he was in the first 8 weeks of the season. And him and Luther Burden make for a really good combination there. So yeah, big role change for Odunze, where he was more of like a more X receiver, honestly, more like weird vertical slot stuff for him as a as a rookie. We saw more Z receiver fully in motion, just cracking off those routes in the intermediate area.
Love it. I want to see that growth there in year three for sure. Garrett Wilson had a brand new offensive coordinator. You know, what did we see there last year for Garrett Wilson?
Yeah, the Jets offense is just real quick. So funny last year because, and I think we might've mentioned this on a recent show, the run game stunk. I know you echoed that, like their design of their run game was not good. The passing game was so well designed. It was just doesn't fit Justin Fields at all. So you didn't really feel that consistently. And by the end of the year, they're playing with damn like Brady Cook. So what are you judging off that? But one of the things I really liked was, the design of the passing game. And part of that was how they used Garrett Wilson. Wilson had his lowest percentage of snaps on the line of scrimmage in his entire career. In the first three seasons of his career, 58.8%, 67.7%, 67.9%, then last year, 49.6%. So actually, the highest rate as a Z receiver in his entire career. His slot rate went from 20.5% in 2024 to 32.4%. I think that's like the right usage for Garrett Wilson. They really got the usage right for him. Whereas in that kind of Aaron Rodgers, Nathaniel Hackett bastardization offense there, very static stuff, a lot of X receiver work. Even again, we're going to talk about another guy who played for the Jets in 2024 here in just a minute, where they were kind of catering to that player, Davante Adams. Garrett Wilson essentially had to be basically a kind of a static X receiver. And his route tree, man, looking back on it, he ran a nine route on 21.5% of his charted routes in 2024. That fell all the way down to 9.7% from those two seasons. And that was a big decline for him, which corresponded to more dig routes, more out routes. And man, I mean, I know that Garrett Wilson finished the year with 369 receiving yards, which did lead the Jets, despite the fact he didn't catch a pass from like October on, I believe. Pretty pathetic stuff there for the New York Jets. He was very productive on a per route basis, on a per game basis. And that's just all of these guys are big winners in terms of production, especially even the next guy. Of course, we're going to talk about, you want your guys if they're going to be in these move around roles, running fewer nine routes, fewer vertical routes. And that's something that we certainly know with guys like Wilson and Odunze.
I mean, especially with the way the meta defense is set up, right? Like with all the cover two stuff happening, it's nine routes are just tough, man. Just extraordinarily tough to complete deeper down the field. Now, if we're talking, you know, hey, vertical slot, we're running these seams. Okay, that's a little different. But I mean, again, when we're talking about these really good number one wide receivers, it is really difficult for you. I mean, again, cover two, that's what it's supposed to take away. Cover two is supposed to take that away, you know?
So, I mean, the four of the five guys we're going to talk about here, their biggest route tree movement was dig routes. They all ran more dig routes, which again, this is why I'm obsessed. I talk about it so much is because as you've been one of the people that have said this the most, it's like, that's how you crack these cover two defenses, these two high safeties, put your big boy pants on, drop back and launch it over the middle of the field, man. And that's all four of these five guys. That was a big one. Their biggest route, like move from 2024 to 2025.
Obviously no one is going to be surprised that JSN saw a huge role shift and, you know, route running shift, but go ahead, talk about JSN there in Seattle.
Yeah, no surprise there. His slot rate went from 78.1% to 20.4%. His rate of snaps on the line of scrimmage, his rate of snaps on the line of scrimmage went from 24.8% to 65.7%. And then from a route perspective, he actually did run more nine routes, but it was still only 10.2%, which is pretty well below the league average. I bet the league average is going to go down now in the next few years. So we'll be updating the charts on that one. But 13.1% dig route rate in 2024, almost 20%, just shy of 20% in 2025. So yeah, that was a big one for him, running more of those patterns. His out route percentage is actually pretty similar, but those intermediate breaking routes, and you know, you and I have talked about this consistently with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I thought he was the best route runner in the NFL last year, and he really, really shined on those dig and out routes where he would sell one thing, do the other. So they really leaned into that for the Seattle Seahawks in 2025, and no surprise, had massive success with it.
Okay, finally, Davante Adams saw a role shift as well. Give us the details.
Yeah, I mean, Davante Adams was the guy that I mentioned earlier, Garrett Wilson and that Jets offense, they kind of had to cater to Adams's alignment. He actually in 2024 had a slot rate of 42.4%, which was easily the highest of his career. He was used sort of as like a big slot receiver for the Jets that year. When he got there, it was like they wanted to just, and it makes sense now intuitively to think about, right? Like they wanted to have him be the movement slot guy, the player that, you know, Aaron Rodgers getting the football out quick, all that stuff, you know, getting those easy answers, the free access throws, all those things. They wanted to have that happen for him. His rate of snaps on the line of scrimmage was 52.1%. That was the third lowest of his career. He hadn't taken a rate of snaps that low on the line of scrimmage since 2016. So those early rookie years where he was that guy. He did have other years, did Davante Adams, where his slot rate was, you know, about like 22, even one that was like in that 2021 season, he was almost 30%, but nothing close to that 42.4% one. And I remember thinking about like, wow, this wasn't something I thought about, but I remember talking about this with people where they're like, well, are we going to see Davante Adams kind of used in the slot for the Rams, like Cooper Kupp has been used in the slot and all that stuff? It's like, no, actually Davante Adams is going to come in there to just play X receiver, and they're going to allow Puka Nacua to do all the fun move around stuff. And that is exactly what happened. Davante Adams in 2025 took 87.1% of his charted snaps outside. He was on the line of scrimmage for 82.1%. That outside alignment rate is the, I mean, back in the day, like 2014, 2016, he was at 92.8% and 88.3%. You obviously don't see that as much anymore for primary receivers. But in 2023 with the Raiders, he was at 87.5%. Adams is one of the last of what I do think is a kind of dying breed in the NFL as like a true X receiver. That's your number one guy. Obviously last year for the Rams, he's not the number one guy. That would of course be Puka Nacua, but still what Adams did really well was line up at X receiver for this team and just kind of win almost as a, you know, Nate Tice, my colleague at Yahoo, has called him like a designated hitter. And that is kind of what he did. We'll break that down when we do his full profile here. But I mean, the other thing that really changed for Adams was, he's another guy that was running a nine route on 17.6% of his charted routes in 2024. This past year, it dropped all the way down to 9.4%. I mean, he was not running vertical routes very often. It was a lot more breaking routes over the middle of the field, including his dig route percentage going from 10.7% in the Aaron Rodgers, we don't throw over the intermediate middle of the field offense, to 22% with the Los Angeles Rams.
Good Lord. I like it. Yeah, man. I don't know. For whatever reason, it's, causation stuff. Like, I don't know, man. Like, but the bottom line is anytime I find these wide receivers who are running dig routes at a high rate and also extremely efficiently, I mean, they seem to be playing extremely well, you know? So I don't know. And again, maybe it's just due to the meta of the defenses that are being deployed right now by NFL defenses.
Can I give you the another thing? I really was down a rabbit hole last night, bro. I also, by the way, finished the Jalen Coker charting, which is in the Discord right now in the sneak preview channel. Spoiler alert. It's good. But the other thing I was looking at was, I was trying to like weight success rate based on how often you run the individual route to get like the top 10 route runners for each route type. I thought you would find this interesting. Top 10 dig route, not just success rates, but how often they run those routes. Okay. So weighted success rate here. Number one is Tetero McMillan. Beautiful. Amon Ross St. Brown, Garrett Wilson, Nico Collins, Marvin Harrison Jr., Jackson Smith and Jigba, Ladd McConkey, Roma Dunze, Emeka Ibuka, Drake London. All receivers I'm pretty excited about this year. Of course, I've still got there's a lot of guys I haven't charted yet that are big, big names like CeeDee Lamb, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson. So if you're like, where are some of these best, they're coming.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is the one name in there that sticks out like a sore thumb, you know, because like all those other guys, extremely productive. MHJ, maybe not so much. So that's the one name where I'm OK. That's interesting to me, you know.
And by the way, I've said this. I am Cardinals curious. I'm actually going to do a breakout segment for our YouTube channel where I'm going to talk about this, how I'm Cardinals curious. I'm actually going to get some. It sounds bad. I'm getting some professional help on the scheme part of it. Maybe I need some professional help because I'm talking about the Cardinals so much. But it's going to be a good video. I think people will like. But one of the thesis of it is, you know, I have blanched at the Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be playing in the Devontae Adams role. Discussion, because I think all these receivers will move around the whole deal. But I mean, if you look at the role change that we just talked about for Devontae Adams, 9.4% nine route rate, 22% dig route rate. Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be running some dig routes. He's going to be running fewer of those sacrificial nine routes like he's been running the last few years. I don't know. Cardinals curious, baby. It's a movement. We're building it. Or maybe it's just me.
It's just you, dude. Everyone else is going with the whole Nathaniel Hackett narrative, and also the fact that MSJ looks like he's got the yips in all these practice videos too.
BFD, he dropped like two passes in one video, and literally every other report I see from MHJ, he's just absolutely crushing camp, and people are just in the doom loop algorithm on that like video that went viral last week. Couldn't care less.
I mean, I'm just saying, you're on an island here, you know? I know you don't care, but people care about that video. And again, in all seriousness, though, the Nathaniel Hackett thing can't be, like, de-emphasized, you know? Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I'm of two minds of that. One, I said, Nathaniel Hackett's name a lot in the last few minutes when talking about the role changes for Buddy Garrett Wilson and everything like that. Yeah. However, a good reminder from Nathaniel Hackett himself today. He was at I think this was posted yesterday, because again, my whole timeline is just Cardinals stuff because I'm I'm lost in the wilderness about this. This was Arizona Cardinals offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett jokes about his role on game day as the non-play calling coordinator. This is from Bo Brack. He posted. Bo's a good guy. I've met him at the Super Bowl a few times. His role, quote, just hang out, cheer, get fired up. Great. Nathaniel, stick in that role. Let little LaFleur do all the cooking. And I think we're going to be good.
This guy's situational awareness is zero, dude. Like, why would you say that?
About, I mean, it was yourself. A joke. It doesn't matter if it's a joke.
It doesn't matter. Situational awareness zero, bro. Why would you say that?
He doesn't care if Twitter's making fun of him. All fantasy Twitter hates him. He keeps cashing checks, man. I said, honestly, this is not a joke. I said this at the time. Part of me does believe that, you know, because Aaron Rodgers just loved Nathaniel Hackett. Yeah. That's basically what like Aaron Rodgers wants in an offensive coach, right? Like, hang out and have a good time with me while I run the offense. And obviously that didn't go so well when those two guys were paired together without a LaFleur. But Nathaniel Hackett, he's got his LaFleur again.
All right, we'll see, dude. We'll see.
Like I said, I got a video, but that's why James is not going to be the person I'm doing this Cardinals curious video.
Yeah, no, please don't. No, I will be the wet blanket, man. You don't want me on the Cardinals video, bro. Davante Adams, let's give a few more details here. Okay. Again, there were some really, really nice parts of his profile. 84% success rate on the dig, 81% success rate on the slant. 57% success rate on the nines, which is, you know, it's a good number. It's not a great number, but it's still a good number. Bottom line is when you talk about dig slant nines and just being highly efficient on the dig slant nines, that is like an old throwback, old school, you know, X receiver route tree. You know, again, maybe you could throw in a few more, you know, curls or comebacks or something, but still, though, he ran a lot of curls, too. So, again, did have a very classic X receiver route participation. But, you know, there are other areas, too, where we're starting to see some decline here.
Yeah, no question. I think we're starting to see some decline. But, of course, it's worth noting, as we talk about with any of these guys, I mean, you could make a strong argument that peak Davante Adams is one of the two or three best receivers of the reception perception era, 2014 to current. He is also one of my favorite receivers of the reception perception era, not just because he is so good, but he is one of the guys that has done something that I don't think we will ever, ever see again, which is he went from the basement of the success rate versus coverage database all the way to the 99th percentile a few years. So that's the thing. Like when we're talking about Adams has declined like in 2025, which I think is inarguable as we'll break down, he's declined from a 99th percentile performer in a variety of these metrics to, you know, maybe not so much this past year. But to your point about the role, as we were discussing earlier, just to revisit and put a period on some of those sentences, it's the guy who was being used as a slot receiver, 42% of his snaps in the slot with the New York Jets in his sampled games in 2024, to basically pure X receiver route tree and X receiver, a little bit less pure X receiver route tree because it's still very McVay based. It's not the old school stuff with all the nine routes, but alignment wise, definitely pretty pure X receiver. 87.1% sampled snaps outside, 82.1% sampled snaps on the line of scrimmage, pretty much just playing X to allow Puka Nacua to do all the fun move around stuff. Now they did get him off the ball 17.9% of his sampled snaps. Nico Collins wishes he could take 17.9% of his sample snaps off the ball. Okay.
There's
a lot of guys that could do with a little bit. George Pickens at 85.7%. He wishes he could take that amount of snaps off the ball. But at the same time, you know, a lot of that also is a little bit skewed to just how heavily X receiver work he was doing. Cause initially, remember when the Rams started to dabble in the 13 personnel world, he was the ISO single receiver you know, on that side. So I think that that's a part of it too. And, you know, but again, he was there mostly to be the X receiver. But in this offense with the McVay, and this is kind of what I talked about, I'm hoping to see Marvin Harrison Jr. with LaFleur now in Arizona running a route tree more like this. You know, it's less of all that pure vertical stuff, right? Where it's just 9% in terms of the go route rate, 9.4% post route rate, 5.4% corner route, 5.8%. It's much more concentrated to digs, slants, and outs. And that's kind of why I said, you know, when we're talking about Adams, as Nate Tice mentioned, as a designated hitter, it's like, mm-hmm. he's definitely a declining player. We'll talk about the overall success rates here in a minute, but there are still some things he does extremely well because he is a capital E elite technician. Let's just lean into those things over and over again.
Yeah, overall, when you take a look at it from, 30,000 feet in the sky, we're talking 70% success rate versus man coverage, 78% versus zone coverage, and just about 70% versus press coverage. The man score is good. Zone score is totally fine considering the type of routes that he's running as an outside X. Press, still really good too. So, yeah, man, again, he's a high-quality player. He's just not stone cold dead assassin that he was, 3-4 years ago. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, from 2023 to 2024, he averaged 76 and 75% success rate versus man. Success rate versus press was 80.3% and 79.2%. So those numbers you just read off there, 70.1 and 69.8, those are obviously declining. And even, you go to the 2019, actually take it a step further. 2018 to 2023, those were truly just like elite
yep.
numbers.
Yep.
The best, yep. best in the league. And so even 24 was a decline on that. That's right. The thing here with Adams is that these numbers are still good, but they are obviously not peak Davante Adams. And as we always say here with aging receivers, the question is not like what they did last year. It was what they did last year. A sign of a cliff coming or the slow decline. I mean, I think you would. Adams is going to be 34 in December of this year. I think we can already pretty well say that he's begun that smooth descent down, and I think it can still be pretty smooth because, he's an elite technician. Like I said, he'll be able to do like the release work stuff. His slant route success rate is unbelievably high, 81.5%, dig routes, almost 84%. Like he'll be able to do that stuff even if he declines physically again this year because he did it this past year because he's still that high end technician. But, obviously, again, what does the year following look like? Not just last year.
Chris Olave also got paid nearly an all green route tree. Not all green though, nearly all green. He had one yellow on there,
right.
which is good.
That's good. If you know, you
and
know.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just crazy heavy on the in-breaking stuff, Matt. 58% route participation on the 4 in-breaking routes, just 20% route participation on the 4 outbreaking routes, and then you throw in 15% route participation on the 9. So heavily used over the top, and man, just an unbelievable diet of in-breaking routes, all of which he was pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, look, I love Chris Olave. I've been a longtime Chris Olave fan. I would argue that the charting profile in previous years basically was just only backed up this past season. And what we got was he finally was deployed in a healthy offensive environment with a quarterback who actually fit his game. And he himself stayed healthy. It was reception perception has always shown that Olave has the talent to be a number one receiver in the league. He was just like, we finally got that blended with good development for a young quarterback, good offensive scheme, and of course his own health. Bringing that all, like, it was those three ingredients were finally blended together with his talent that's already been, made apparent many, many times over the course of his career. One cool thing was, and again, this comes back to the role change. It wasn't, I don't think he was like disgustingly deployed in Clint Kubiak's offense by any mean, means, but it was just like, he had to play a lot of X receiver because they play these big, heavy, condensed offenses. You know, he took a career high that season, 68.3% sampled snaps out, on the ball, 79% out wide. Of course, that's primary X receiver stuff. He has the skills to win there, but increased pre-snap flexibility was the name of the game in Kellen Moore's offense. He took just 55% sampled snaps off the line of scrimmage, 64.2% out wide, 33% in the slot. So those numbers were all, again, he got to take a lot of different reps from every position. There's so much pre-snap motion in this offense. So 64% out wide rate compared to 79% the year before. That was a big change for Olave. This Saints offense plays a ton, at least they did last year. They were number three in terms of percentage of plays with three plus receivers on the field and number one in pre-snap motion rate on dropbacks. That it allows for receivers to all get reps off the line, in the slot, from all the different positions. And Olave obviously did really well with that.
Yeah, I go back to the 2024 season that you mentioned with Clint Kubiak. And, you know, it's one of these like giant what ifs in New Orleans, where if they had stayed healthy, because Chris Olave played eight games, Marquez Valdes-Scantling they had brought back in, right? Like this team had just absolutely got obliterated.
Shahid even got hurt.
Yeah, he only played six games that season for New Orleans, and they didn't have a single player that could stay healthy. Everyone got hurt that year, and as a result, the offense on the back end, the entire second half of 2024 was one of the worst in the NFL, and the scapegoat there was Clint Kubiak, right? So like, he gets let go. I just wonder, like, if New Orleans had stayed healthy, I think Clint Kubiak stays there in that role, right? And or maybe they even give him a bump at some point. Like, maybe they fire the head coach, but they want to keep Clint Kubiak. Like, I don't know. It's an interesting like mental exercise to like kind of like go down that hole, you know, and just see what happens if New Orleans would have stayed healthy in 2024. Instead, he gets fired. He goes to Seattle. They win a Super Bowl. Now he's in Las Vegas, you know? So it was great.
I was actually, there's an article I wrote for Yahoo saying, like, I am weirdly fascinated with the New Orleans Saints offense heading into 2024. And I remember people being like, are you okay? And then they came out and just smoked the first 2 weeks of the season.
Totally.
And obviously, they crushed like a bad Cowboys defense and a Panthers team. I get that. But they were looking like a really good offense. And then, yeah, everybody got hurt. I am hoping that that's how my Cardinals curiosity take ages, because it is honestly based on similar variables there, and that it's like a big schematic change that's going to be good for the wideouts. But yeah, I mean, even Clint Kubiak, like, again, I was not that critical of Olave's deployment in Clint Kubiak's offense, but it was mostly the 2 years before that, like in Pete Carmichael's offense, which was just like this archaic old school offense. And you know, you and I talked about this a lot early in Olave's career. 7.4% slant route rate as a rookie is the third lowest I've charted in RP history. And it was just crazy. Insane. How the Insane. Ultimate like gets no layup receivers. And we know he's good in the vertical game, but they no doubt over-indexed on what he was doing in the vertical game. And the proof is in the pudding with that, because he's coming off the best year of his career. And what do you know? His slant route rate jumps up to 17.3% this year with an 85.5% success rate. You mean to tell me that getting one of the like a guy who was a natural route runner in college, like a pro level route runner in college.
Yeah.
Getting him some quick hitters, getting him some layups might be good for the health of the offense. Might just be. Yeah. So pretty excited to see that there for Olave. That was a big change, you know, in his deployment again. And I do want to talk about like where he lines up with Tyler Shuck here in just a minute, which is actually not on slants, but it's a different route. And, you know, again, through all of these variables we're talking about here throughout the course of Olave's career, he has been good and honestly remarkably consistent in his reception perception charting. Olave's 77.1% success rate versus man coverage is a career best mark, cracks the 91st percentile.
Wow.
Was over 80% success rate versus zone once again, something he's done all four seasons in the NFL. And this I thought was crazy. So he had a 77.5% success rate versus press this past season. These are his success rate versus press coverages in the first three seasons of his career. 77.5%, 77.1%, 77.1%, and once again, 77.5% this fast. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Like, he's just been, he's been good all 4 years, no matter what the role is and whatever.
Right.
Again, the right deployment, the coach, the quarterback, and, you know, obviously no concussion scares this past year. That's what this is all about here.
I will also say the deployment is interesting to me because the route diet is very balanced, right? He's got six different routes that he ran in the double digit percentages, right? So again, they didn't pigeonhole him into like a specific role. They just use him everywhere, running all kinds of different routes. And that route distribution, honestly, it's pretty rare in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You don't see this level of route distribution even among some of the best guys. You know, it's like you'll see heavy usage somewhere. Like Puka Nacua is going to see heavy dig route usage. You know what I'm saying? And really lean into that. The fact that, the fact that they in New Orleans are comfortable with Olave being as great of a route runner that he is, they're like, yeah, man, this guy can run everything. Just get him out there and just have him do a little bit of everything and let's just see what happens. And it's been great.
Yeah, that slant route percentage I said earlier, 17.3%, that's the highest on his route tree. Obviously, again, it's weighted to NFL averages and stuff like that. But he didn't run a single route higher than 17.3%. As you mentioned, very balanced. That's these guys that are craftsmen, like the high-end route runners and technicians, which Olave is. Like, that's the thing that just drove me crazy about him. It's like, oh, he's so fast. It's like, yeah, he's fast. That's cool. I agree. But he's such a good technician. Let him unfurl, run the full route tree, man. And there's no question. Like, that's a great point by you this is a guy running the full route tree. This is what it looks like here. And that's one of the cool things tracking, like, his quarterback, his the change in quarterback play for him with going from Spencer Rattler to Tyler Shuck. And I'm actually not here to bag on Spencer Rattler whatsoever when I talk about this, because I think Spencer Rattler actually had a really cool connection with Chris Olave on the outbreaking routes, particularly like quick outs. Olave ran a flat route on 5% of his sampled routes, 87.5%. There were so many times at the beginning of the season when Spencer Rattler was starting where it's just like, hey, I'm dropping back and I'm getting that football out quick. They were designing a lot of, I remember I did a breakdown on him. It's on the website very early in the season for the, I think week two or week three charting notebook for Olave, and just highlighted a lot of those plays where Rattler was getting the ball to him on those quick out routes. But I talked about the weighted success rate, by route type earlier, and Olave was the eighth best out route runner in the NFL among guys I charted last year. Corner routes as well, he was one of the best performers, the number one performer, actually, excuse me, at weighted success rate on corner routes. So some of those outbreakers there, he was really good. And Spencer Rattler was excellent at finding him on those patterns. However, a lot of meat left on the bone from our guy Spencer Rattler on the inbreakers. That was where he just did not have a great connection with honestly, it wasn't even like a connection with Olave. I just think that's where Spencer Rattler's just not his best. He's just not his best working over the middle of the field. However, I mean, Tyler Shuck gets in there and he just starts just finding him over and over again on the big breaking routes over the middle of the field, dig routes, post routes as well, which he ran both of those at an above average rate and had a 78.3 and 78.4% success rate. That was really where we saw the best stuff in terms of, I would argue, any chemistry that Olave's had with any quarterback over the course of his career, because certainly was never great with Derek Carr. But yeah, big time stuff there from the combination of Chris Olave and Tyler Shuck. And I expect that to continue this year. And I think Jordan Tyson will be really interesting to kind of add into the mix here.
Okay.
With these two guys, because I think we could see something where, you know, we sometimes get this with receivers where one guy's the zone beater and one guy's the man beater. I could kind of see Olave end up being the man coverage answer. And Jordan Tyson, you know, not for nothing, had the best success rate versus zone coverage in this year's class and one of the top five marks since 2021 from Power Four receivers charted. So I think that could be an interesting combination there. Not to mention, like, Jordan Tyson was really good on the outs and the digs as well, where again, I think where Tyler Shuck does his best work.
All right, there you go. Full profile on the site for both Davante Adams and Chris Olave, receptionperception.com. Go and check it out. All right, we got to go. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you, but remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.